This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, Zach Jones and Derek Kramer.
Look
hanging with you.
You.
I feel good today. I feel good. I got a lot of sleep. It's cold as can be, and we're just fighting it. We're fighting to stay happy.
Hey, who doesn't like a good old insert Hoth reference here?
It feels like -5 outside, Derek.
That's because the wind chill kind of made it that way.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so you're not that far off on your bases.
No, I'm trying to feel good. I'm ready to go.
Speaking of though, this is a sign of true friendship, right here. You pulled into the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I have a fatal flaw of if I use my seat warmers, I take my coat off in the car.
Oh, that's
so. I'm standing in the parking lot with no coat on, waiting for you.
I saw that too, and I'm like, I'm taking too long to get out of the car. Like, I'm putting my phone in my pocket. I'm grabbing my water cup in my bag, and I'm like, this guy's in a hoodie and jeans.
And
he's dying out here.
And it's a thin zip up hoodie too.
Yeah, it's not good for this weather.
But that said, that's how I know I'm Buffalo coated.
And then I heard Alec Anderson was in Hawaii earlier today with Jeremy and Joe, and I'm like, oh,
but then he
man.
Just turns around and says, it's fine. You know, you could stay indoors too.
Yeah, sure.
Great advice.
I'm like, all right, whatever, fine.
Hey,
here.
He embraces the city, and so do I.
Yeah. Paul Hamilton brought this up, too, with Mike and Chris, where he's like, why was I not in Florida during this little break I had? What am I doing here?
This little
break I had turned to, 15 degrees. It's tough. Winter's never going away.
No.
It is a battle.
It's February.
Yeah.
It's normal. It's okay.
Yeah, but the last few years, we had, spurts of, 40 degrees, 50 degrees. Hey, you can go golfing. Look at that. And I didn't necessarily need to go golfing, the nice weather where I can open up some windows, get the fresh air in.
It's February. This is supposed to happen.
I want to roll down my car window.
You will be able to.
And feel the breeze on my face as I drive in. I'm like
not,
a dog.
Just not this month.
Ridiculous.
No, it's February.
It's February, which means it's almost March. And on that, we will be having UB women's head coach Becky Burke coming on in just a little over 10 minutes here. But before we do that, I do want to kind of set the stage for today. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Josh Schmidt hanging with us as well. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
It is franchise tag window opening day. It's going to be opened up until, I believe, March 4th.
Yes.
And so with that, are the Bills expected to do anything? No. They have not tagged anyone since before the Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott era. It's 2016, Cordy Glenn. So there, and really, there's never been a reason or a need
they
to use
have a
the tag.
Tendency to take care of things before it gets
Bingo.
To that point.
They don't get to the drama of it. It's kind of why the James Cook conversation has been so fascinating because, well, they've kind of been drama-free for the most part. So no, they're not expected to be a part of this. But there are other teams that could be, or really, it feels like they're going to be. The Bengals with wide receiver T. Higgins. I think what also is going to be kind of interesting to see is, what about Minnesota and Sam Darnold? I think they'll let him hit free agency and go with J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But there could also be something to, well, you won 14 games with him. You don't want to sign him to a big deal, but you don't want him to walk for free. Maybe you try to do something like that. I don't anticipate it, but they're going to be somebody to keep an eye on. However, ultimately, the franchise tag window opening up sort of signifies the real beginning of the offseason. Yes, we've had the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game, stuff like that, but this is ultimately the beginning. This is when teams are making moves for the next season. They're preparing themselves for free agency opening up in March and then the draft in April. And on that point, kind of tweeted it out as well. You can also reach us 803-0550 if you want to call in. What move do you need to see the Bills make? Could be the big trade for Myles Garrett. Could be a certain draft prospect you want. What move do you need to see be made for this offseason to be considered a success for the Bills? For me, it's a few of them. The main one really is no big drama. No big drama.
I've got potentially bad news on that front.
I know. But looking back to last year, and me and Josh talked about this yesterday, I don't want anything necessarily to come of the James Cook situation. Because really, what were we spending last offseason worried about constantly?
Stephon Diggs,
and who the hell is getting the ball? Now, this year may have proven, to a certain extent, just trust the Bills. They'll be fine.
They have the quarterback. It's okay.
They'll be fine. But I'd rather not necessarily outright just trust them with a blank check. I'd like to have some insurances. I'd like to have some collateral here of like, nah, okay, you have my belief. They lose James Cook, Derek, and it all of a sudden, and I'm just for argument's sake, or there's drama that this could be his last ride. There is a feeling that all of a sudden in this draft, they have to start looking towards post-James Cook. And I think this draft is going to be very important of reloading the defense and getting, I think, clear-cut players who can come in day one and contribute to this team. And if you're looking at a potential future of Cook's gone, or because I've seen a few callers and a few tweets about, you know, putting him in a trade package for somebody like a Myles Garrett, a Micah Parsons, a Max Crosby, all of a sudden it becomes, yeah, but now you do have to find another running back. Ray Davis and Ty Johnson are not going to be enough for how the Bills want to play football. It's, neither of them were the number one back. James Cook ultimately was.
Yeah, no, I think that to frame it with your question, with running back, obviously I'm expecting if something is coming of this and your objective is a failure, then the Bills will absolutely take a mid-round pick and go use it on a running back again. Mm-hmm. Something that this regime does regardless of what they have on the running backs on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
For answering the question of what do I want for it to be a success this year, I started saying this the minute the Bills were eliminated, and my belief has been fortified thanks to that Super Bowl. They need a star on that defense. They need an impact player. I'm not worried about where.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the secondary, awesome. I want it on the pass rush. Get an established chaos bringer for your defense. You do not have star power anymore on this defensive unit. You need some.
And that really was proven in these last, I would even say these last two Super Bowl champions, having some level of star power on their defense. Chris Jones, Trent McDuffie, Justin Reed for the Chiefs. Then you look at this Eagles team. It seemed like it was all over the place. Jalen Carter, Zach Bond, who I saw I'm blanking on their name, but it was on ESPN talking about the statistics and the numbers mm-hmm. they saw from Bond. It was one of the best linebacker seasons they had seen in recent memory. Then you also go to two of their cornerbacks were Rookie of the Year candidates.
Yes, and there's different ways to get yourself a star player.
I expect, though, it's easier to acquire one than draft one when you're picking at 30. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the draft is the draft and anything can happen. But I think for me to call it a successful offseason, I need to see the Bills do something about getting a star player on this team, on this defensive front, because they do not have a household name
mm-hmm.
that can do what they are supposed to do. Von Miller, the idea was there. And up until his injury, he was producing like Von Miller.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, luck plays into the factor. The Bills did not get the good portion of luck, and Von Miller rapidly declined. That does not stop you from pursuing the ideal of getting a superstar player on this defense. Do not let the past dictate what you do in the future. I expect Brandon Bean not to be scared about that sort of thing. It's not like the Sabres. And
mm-hmm.
I expect that he'll be aggressive about adding a star piece to a defense and a difference maker. That was what was missing from the team last year. They were getting turnovers, yes. But it was live by the sword, die by the sword. And if you're not forcing turnovers, you're having problems.
No, that was a big thing. They were not a good third down defense. They did not get a high pressure rate. And their run defense was bad as well. It was a lot of, if they're getting turnovers, the score will look pretty good. You'll
yes.
be happy. If they're not, you're in the LA game. To a certain extent, the second half of the Detroit game, although I really liked the first half performance by them. And it's just, it's...
And having a difference maker, a guy like an impact player mm-hmm. on defense, a star player on defense, will flip a game for you. Mm-hmm. The Pittsburgh Steelers are relevant because of T.J. Watt. It's not because of Mike Tomlin being able to coach a team to over 500. It's because T.J. Watt steals games for them.
Mm-hmm.
He steals them. You need a player like that. And it's usually easier to get one via a trade.
So looking at that real quick here, you're mentioning trade, and a lot of the trade talk is mainly due to Myles Garrett openly and quite loudly demanding a trade. I mean, all of Super Bowl week, he was on media or Radio Row kind of talking to whoever he could to voice his opinions. I've always been more of a draft guy, though. I think a lot of times free agency is more just fill in small holes. Draft is where you really build the core of your team, and trades can be to add that last piece. I'm still of the belief, while I would love a Garrett, a Crosby, a Parsons, of course, being kind of like the latter, and I just don't think he's available at all. For me, it's tough because I do think they have much more issues. I don't think one of those guys fixes all of it. I do think he helps out most of it, though. But how much do you actually trust the Bills to get, I guess, multiple difference makers through the draft on defense? Because up to this point—
That's hard to do.
It's hard to do, but up to this point as well— They have no real issue of getting NFL players.
No.
They have a real issue of getting difference makers. Even go back to a guy they didn't keep, mainly because he priced himself out, but Tremaine Edmonds. You know, he signs a big contract with Chicago, but Chicago fans and Bills fans now will all tell you he's kind of just a dude.
He's there. He's a starter.
Yeah.
But he's not a difference maker. And that was his problem, was his lack of splash plays, where Terrell Bernard stepped in immediately and started causing more turnovers than Edmonds ever did. The Bills had a superstar on defense who was taken away from it with injury before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Trey White.
Yep.
Trey White was emerging as a star player in this league, and then back-to-back years with devastating injuries took away that promise.
Even Matt Milano, you could argue, too. I mean, he had hit the first team All-Pro run, and then injuries took it away.
And it's not to say that the Bills can't build a star, get star players within a draft class. It is getting multiple star players within the same draft class that is a near impossible thing to do. Like, good for Philly for doing it, but also, what helps a young secondary thrive in the league, Zach?
Oh, it's pressure rates.
Great pass rushes.
And it's the thing, too. It's all symbiotic.
Symbiotic.
Yeah.
You get a difference maker that can rush the passer. You then have an easier time bringing a new kid into a secondary, and they can still thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're reacting to the ball sooner, because the quarterback is getting it out sooner, because he does not like getting smacked around.
I mean, you look at a situation. I think the Super Bowl was a perfect performance by Philadelphia and one of the worst by the Chiefs.
Right.
I've seen recent memories. But it also
does... It works
does,
against every quarterback, but it,
yeah, exactly. And you go on any national TV show, any former player was telling you, like, yeah, no quarterback likes to get hit. They all play worse when they're getting hit.
What draws the bank on defense?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the secondary players. They do, some of them do get highly paid, like big contracts.
Throw Revis, you know.
But who gets, on average, the best treatment when it comes to contracts? On defense, it's pass rushers.
Even just awards. I mean, Patrick Surtain, yes, won Defensive Player of the Year this year, but a lot of the time it is pass rushers.
Get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it goes. That's how it is supposed to operate.
It's going to be an interesting offseason for the Bills. I think for a lot of teams, too, because Garrett has been so open about wanting to get traded. So it is going to be something. I wonder, though, how much the Bills are realistic in that conversation actually hit them, especially with a team like Washington, who experienced a lot of success really suddenly. And we saw what the Bills did when they did that. I mean, they made a huge trade for Stephon Diggs and then made a big splash in free agency the year later with Von Miller. But we go now to the Wester Hotline, as joining us today, UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke. Coach, good morning. How are we doing? It's been a little bit since we've spoken, but you guys continue to stay super successful.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm happy to report that. It's been a great season for us so far, and just looking to keep it rolling.
And so on that, you've now hit 20 wins, the first time under your watch UB has done that. And it's also the fourth program you've hit 20 wins with. I mean, you know, when you look at that kind of success, 20 wins in college basketball is always kind of seen as the benchmark for a successful season. Then it's getting into the tournament. But you know, when you see that level of success, what does that mean? Or the level of success and consistency, what does that mean to you?
It's just a testament to, you know, the culture we've built here and the staff we have in place, our players, and, you know, just the daily grind every day that we work towards in terms of just, you know, cultivating an environment of success in championship caliber basketball. And it is a truly a daily process that we commit everything to, you know, and hold ourselves to a standard that, you know, ultimately, you know, hopes to get to the point where you can reach 20 wins. So I've been really proud of just the work. It's work. It's a grind. It's an everyday type of thing. And, you know, I'm just glad that it's showing with our record and the success that we've had so far this year.
Coach, when it comes down to it, being a successful mid-major program in college these days with the transfer portal and everything like that, you mentioned the consistency, the culture that you want to bring in there. What are some of the biggest challenges that you have to navigate through when it comes to being a top-tier mid-major program and dealing with that sort of stuff, building not only the culture year in, year out, but making sure you're planning for those future years as you go along as well?
Yeah, I think it's just important to be aware of the, you know, the world that we live in these days and the environment that we live in terms of, you know, just keeping your players, you know, happy where they are and giving them the best student-athlete experience that you can. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, like, we want it to work on our end. They want it to work on their end, and they want to win. They want to be in a program where they're successful. They have a great opportunity as a student athlete to get a good education and a great playing experience. And, you know, we feel like we provide that here. So, you know, we can only control the controllables, and a lot of that stuff is out of our hands. But the good news is, you know, it's not something that we're just dealing with here at Buffalo. I think it's the landscape across college basketball in general, not just in the mid-major tier, but, you know, at the Power Four level, at the mid-major level, at the low Division One level. It's just something that we're all trying to navigate. And, you know, I think if you are, you know, just if you just do embrace the circumstances that we have every single year, and you realize that there is going to be a rebuild every year, then you're prepared for it. You don't want to be delusional about reality. So we just, you know, take those things as they come. And ultimately, at the end of the season, you're going to be in some sort of rebuild every single year. And luckily, that's where I'm comfortable. And that's what I've done my whole career. And so we're ready for it. But we don't think about those things till the end of the season. And we're just enjoying where we're at right now and figuring out a way how to win the next one.
Right, living in the moment. 20-4 overall, 9-3 in the conference, tied for second in the MAC with Toledo. You guys will get a rematch with them at Toledo on Wednesday the 26th. But you are playing tomorrow against Kent State. It's going to be Pride Night tomorrow at 6. Kent State, though, right behind you and Toledo. How much does that game mean for the standings and kind of finishing out the season on a really high note? Especially, you know, Pride Night's always a good night for the fans as well.
Yeah, I think this final stretch for us is going to be a gauntlet in terms of just, you know, we got to take it one game at a time. Our focus is on Kent State. You know, I don't really look at the standings and figure out where we are and who we need to beat. Like, every game we go out there, we need to win. You know, the next one is the most important one. And, you know, as we get closer to the MAC tournament, we'll figure some of that other stuff out. But, you know, we want to beat Kent State because it's Kent State, and we want to win that specific game, not for standings or rankings or anything like that. And so that's kind of where our head's at. We're not looking ahead by any means. We have a really, really hard, important job to do tomorrow for 40 minutes. And I think that's where our entire team's head's at. But we do, you know, in the back of our minds, understand the implications of these games. And we need to win as many of these down the stretch as possible. And I think a lot of us have a really, really tough schedule. A lot of those teams you're talking about in those top four or five seeds are going to be battling it out against each other here down the stretch. So it's going to be very, very telling and very revealing going into Cleveland where everybody's at.
Coach, I got to say, I love the somewhat like the hateful energy. Like, you want to beat Kent State because it's Kent State. So first of all, love that sort of thing. Just the hate always can get you going. But what have you learned about this team through conference play for this year as you are still trying to find your way through and not just chasing for the potential of winning the regular season, but heading into the conference tournament in March?
I've just learned that, you know, on any given night we can beat anybody in this league, but on any given night we could also lose to anybody in this league. And that's the beauty of the MAC, and that's the beauty of this level of basketball, is that it's very competitive. That's, you know, why all our players wanted to play in the MAC, why I wanted to coach in the MAC, is because it's just so highly competitive every single night. You know, I believe that we're good enough to beat the Ball States of the world when we play our best, but I believe that if we don't play our best, that, you know, some of those bottom tier teams are capable of beating us. And so we know we have to come every single day, and we've just learned that every day, you know, being solid for 40 minutes is so important. You can't take anybody lightly. You can't underestimate anybody. You can't overestimate anybody. This thing's wide open. And, you know, I think we've let a couple go that we wish we could have had back, but luckily we get another opportunity at some of those teams here down the stretch, which I'm looking forward to.
Before the MAC tournament starts on March 12th, on March 1st, that's going to be a Saturday, you guys are adding Courtney Brown's number 10 jersey to the Wall of Fame. She's the only MAC player of the year on the women's side, a career 16-point scorer, 9.1 rebounds per game. She's on the team from 06 to 2011. What does that mean for, you know, your current roster to see, you know, her name get added to that Wall of Fame, but also just the impact she had on the women's program as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's huge to see another women's jersey up there and just what she was able to do for our program. And, you know, to say you were the MAC player of the year, that's something very, very, very hard to do. When you look at the guards that we've had in this program and the players just in general that we've had in this program, some of the most dynamic players in the country and some of the most high-level scoring players in the country, to not have received that MAC player of the year honor, that shows you how competitive it is and how coveted it is. So the fact that Courtney did that, I think, just tells you what type of player she was in itself. You know, so her numbers speak for themselves, her accolades speak for themselves. And I think this is long overdue. I'm really thankful that we're able to do it this year for her. And it can't be anything but motivation for our players to see that happen. And, you know, think someday that maybe could be them, or, you know, just the importance of women's basketball here at Buffalo just speaks volumes.
On the West Tour hotline, UB Women's head coach Becky Burke. UB Women are back in action tomorrow night when they take on Kent State at 6. That can be heard on our sister station, The Bet 1520. Coach, one more from me, and it's a lot due to my own athletic past. I was a swimmer in college, and for us, always towards the end of the year, we did change, you know, how we were training, how we were practicing, and, you know, we called it tapering, but really it was getting ready for the big races down the stretch. Do you guys change up, you know, how you guys are practicing, how you're preparing, what have you, when you do get towards the end of this year? You've already mentioned it's a grind because of how competitive the MAC is, and of course, with the tournament coming up, you guys have made the MAC tournament final. Is there any change in preparation, or is it more just fine-tuning the details you guys have been, you know, hammering home up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're a team that changes what we do no matter what time of the year it is. And so I think the duration of practice changes a little bit. You want to shorten it up a little bit. You don't want to be out there for two and a half hours every day. But as far as the speed that we go and the intensity and the expectation and the accountability to practicing at a high level, none of that will ever change for us. And so I think that's what we stand for as a program, just coming out every day, whether we're on the floor for an hour or an hour and a half, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, the expectation and the standard is the same every single day, whether we play the next day or we have a week off. You know, like, those types of things never change for us. And we just believe, you know, how you do it one day is how you do it every day, you know. So for us, I think it's important that we keep that same, you know, energy down the stretch. And we don't want to let our foot off the gas at all. That includes practices. And I think that's really important for us.
Coach, last one here from me. When it comes to the recent consistency of success with the UB Women's program, basically, what is the pitch to make sure that people are getting down here and catching these games, especially with, you know, Pride Night going on tomorrow against Kent State, March 1st, Courtney Brown getting added to the Wall of Fame? What's the energy that you would like to continue to see from the UB faithful?
Oh, we've had an incredible home court advantage this season, and our crowds have just grown consistently since I've been here, going on, you know, year three now. Like, you know, to look out there and not know whether it's a men's or a women's game because of our crowd sizes this year, I think is such a testament to our program and what we've done and our players. And, you know, they say it sounds cliche, but if you win, they'll come. And, you know, that's what we've done here, going on 20 wins this year. And, you know, we've just steadily seen our crowds grow. And it's been so, so, so awesome to see our community rally behind us. And we have not had anybody that I've heard that's been disappointed of the product that's been put on the floor and their experience when they come. It's such a family-friendly environment, but you're getting really, really, really good high-level competitive basketball, too, when you come watch us play. And so we love that everybody feels rewarded when they come and they have a great time. And I'm just so thankful for the community and everybody that's come out to watch us. And our attendance numbers have been incredible this season, and we're super, super thankful. And it truly makes a difference. You know, a family that's thinking about, you know, bringing three people, that makes a huge difference. We recognize it, we see it, and we're so appreciative of it. So it's been awesome to see over the course of these 3 years, the, you know, the fan support build to what it's been this year. And we're just very grateful.
Coach, thank you so much for jumping on with us this morning. Good luck the rest of the way. We'll be listening, watching, showing up, the whole thing. Good luck the rest of the way. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke there on the Wester Hotline. And like I said, they're back in action tomorrow at 6 p.m. at home, Kent State Pride Night. If you can't make the game, it's going to be over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. Derek, I mean, you know me because you know I'm a college basketball
junkie. Yes, you're a college junkie.
Very few periods in my sports life have I enjoyed more than when both the men's and women's program were like must-watch TV.
Yes.
And they were on ESPN or CBS Sports or what have you. Some of the best stuff is watching good college, local college basketball.
Big Four basketball.
Yeah.
When it's at its peak around here, Big Four basketball becomes a
so
big deal.
Fun.
And for one thing to see, it's... We've seen a lot of success, especially from the UB teams, where coaches have been going into different programs at that point. But you see the UB women's team under Coach Jack, as she had brought them back to some sort of resurgence. And now seeing Coach Burke doing the same thing here for the UB women. And again, consistency in the success of the program overall. With her being able to come in, keep that consistency level, keep that success level... Hearing her talking about the home court advantage, mm-hmm. hearing her saying that, you know, one of the best ways to get people in seats is to win. And not only understanding that, but also being able to reap the benefits of you're winning, people are showing up, you get to enjoy the energy. So Big Four basketball has its place here in Buffalo. And when it's peak, you look out.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
It's electric.
Yep, 803-0550, the number to call. We were talking about NFL free agency as well. We're still a little bit far off from it, but what do you need to see from the Bills to consider this offseason of success, not only with free agency, but with the draft as well, with, of course, today being the opening of the franchise tag window at 4 o'clock today. The Bengals are expected to be active there with wide receiver T. Higgins. That might upset a number of teams. New England, that might not be ideal. But we'll talk all of that. Four Nations as well. We did get a bit of an update injury-wise for the United States, who will play Canada on Thursday. We'll get to all of that and plenty more after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR. Back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We do have our final set for the Four Nations. It'll be on Thursday, the United States taking on Canada. The U.S. dealing with a lot of injuries, and namely, though, Charlie McAvoy and Frank Saravelli. He tweeted this out about an hour ago, actually, for an update on him. He was admitted to the hospital last night with an infection that stemmed from a minor injury. Although Saravelli goes on to say he is fine, there is no long-term concern. His status, though, for Thursday is undetermined. He has not been ruled out. Though, Derek, I think we know something that maybe Boston is like releasing a statement or
there
something
it is. Like that. He will not play.
Okay.
He will not play in Thursday's Four Nations Face-Off Championship game. So one of the biggest difference makers on Saturday night is not going to be in for Team USA at the Four Nations Tournament for the final.
That was a big thing from last night, too, by the way. Like, in a meaningless game in which the U.S. did lose 2-1 to Sweden, can guys not get hurt?
And that's the thing about the Four Nations Tournament.
Oh, my gosh.
Really, really has been fascinating to me is the even with a meaningless game, the energy was there.
Oh, the energy was high.
It was there. It was hot. And I'm here for all of it. I cannot wait for World Cup of Hockey tournaments every 2 years. Or every 4 years,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah.
But every 2 years, you're getting World Cup of Hockey and you're getting Olympic play.
This tournament, and we haven't even seen the final yet. The final could send me over the edge. Has sort of fixed like international hockey for me. Like I've talked to you about this.
It was
off
never
the air.
Ready. International hockey. There was nothing wrong with it. And then Gary Bettman and the NHL owners said, "Nah, we're gonna take the fun thing that we could do with hockey and not do it."
Yeah, we're just gonna ruin it. But for me, like I see a lot of people here at work like wearing U.S. sweaters and stuff like that.
That was me yesterday.
And I have pride. Don't get me wrong. The World Cup, the Olympics, what have you. But I don't have like those experiences. I'm like, whatever. And this tournament has kind of like reawoken that kind of feeling of like, this is awesome.
As a matter of fact, you and I were walking, talking in this sort of thing, walking in here.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, I didn't really care about the Four Nations tournament heading in.
Yeah.
And I didn't either. I was like, okay, it's going to be a nice little thing, fun little tournament, no big deal. It was the perfect appetizer
to
bringing the NHL back. It's four teams. It's not too much. It was the perfect appetizer.
Whatever
your favorite appetizer is that you order at a restaurant, the Four Nations tournament was that for you, for me, for everyone in between.
Yeah, it's been awesome. The only frustrating thing is I heard Sneaky Joe say this yesterday. I almost don't want the NHL to come back. Because I'm going to go back to watching like some kind of bad teams. And be
we're
like,
also
oh.
talking about that in Buffalo. Where
I know.
In the Eastern Conference, and it's relatively like set in stone. Their last place in the Eastern Conference.
I mentioned it last night in the nightcap, where I'm like,
what if I'm Columbus?
Yeah,
a team that has been dealing with an off season of tragedy again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But your team is in a playoff race.
Yeah.
Guess what? I can't wait for hockey to come back at that moment.
I can't wait
for my team to come back. So.
Have like this new grab of fans who are jumping in for the second half of the season. Like we were talking about it too.
And a Columbus with a why not us season right now.
And you know, for awful circumstances, they're going to be a wonderful story if they make the playoffs. But you know, we were talking about the ratings they got on Saturday, 4.4 million.
Yes.
For the first matchup between U.S. and Canada. You know, what's it going to be on Thursday for the final? And I just wish the Sabres could be legitimately a part. Of potentially like a real big growth for the game of, ooh, hockey's like in the mindset of people. And it helps too that the NBA's All-Star break, which I mean, this is replacing the NHL's All-Star break, was a nightmare to the point where the only time you hear any national shows talk about it is not to be like, oh, it was really cool. Like my son had a great time or daughter had a great time watching it. And even I enjoyed it. It was how much of a cluster, you know, what was that? And why are we still here?
It is becoming a point where I talked about it at length with Joe Kelly yesterday, mm-hmm. of the death of All-Star games.
Yeah.
And how we're watching it all happening in live time. Combining it with the success that the Four Nations tournament has had, I don't know if the NHL goes back to All-Star games and they just let people have off for a couple of years. Like, you have off for the year before your Olympic play. You have off. Mm-hmm. For the quote-unquote All-Star break before your World Cup of Hockey. Like, I think every other year, you just let the players rest.
It might become something where, you release the All-Star teams. And, I think they'll always have the events.
Because the last time we saw an NHL All-Star event, Nikita Kucherov decided to say, heck it, and not care at all.
I think you'll have events where, you can go meet fans and it becomes like this kind of big thing.
Yes, but it's not anything that will resemble the on-ice product.
Yeah, it's a lot like what the Pro Bowl is now, which is it's more for like kids and families to show up and see their players, and they kind of play like goofy games.
And NBA players want there to still be an all-star game.
I just don't know how long it's going to last.
Ready? It's also that players like Steph Curry changed the game so much that the All-Star game is just moonshots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's how deep can you chuck a three? Let's just chuck threes and have that kind of day.
Because everyone can shoot now because you kind of have to. You have to be able to shoot in a modern NBA, especially if you're going to make an All-Star team.
And that's the thing is that the game changed so much that the All-Star game does not involve – like Nikola Jokic, he had said something about the fact that like it doesn't – like I don't belong in this.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jokic to say that, one of the best players in the NBA,
yeah,
to acknowledge, yeah, the All-Star game, like, I don't really fit for it because it's long ball on steroids.
Yeah.
Jokic, obviously, one of the best
players. He's a big guy that can pass.
One of the best interior players who can dish.
Mm-hmm.
The dish part is pretty easy, but like, how much big boy play are you really getting into in the All-Star game?
Yeah. I think it is an interesting topic of the death of All-Star games, and are we really heading there, especially when you're seeing some of the stuff, Four Nations, the World Baseball Classic from a few years ago, too, where like, that was before the season, but you saw how much passion there was
there, NBA,
and how much people loved it.
The NBA players also pitching on the idea of like, hey, maybe we do it U.S. versus best players of the world.
Yeah.
International play could get the players going, and you clearly see it all the time.
There's a clip now going around from Kevin Durant for the Paris Olympics, him crying about playing for the United States and how much it meant to him.
Yeah. And I think that an NBA squad of the best players of all of Europe, that could be a very dope roster.
I think the Europeans win. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah.
I think if you put together a roster and they had actual practice time and like could like form chemistry.
Luka, Giannis,
Jokic. That's Wemby.
Just, yeah.
Like you're going to have an issue.
You're having fun.
Oh, 803, man, that makes me want it so bad. 803-0550, the number to call. We're also talking NFL offseason with the with the franchise tag window opening today. And with that, we will go to our first caller of the morning, and we go to Tim in South Carolina. Tim, how are we doing this morning? You're on WGR.
Good morning, guys. Sorry I'm a little late to the party of your prior discussion in the before you got the
email. Oh, no worries.
I just wanted to chime in really quick because my major takeaway from the Super Bowl, and I know that we have recency bias, but my major takeaway was how the Eagles defense didn't really do anything crazy. They didn't even blitz, I don't think. But they really did a good job of marrying the pass rush with the coverage. And my biggest thing that I want the Bills to do this offseason, of course, we would all love the shiny new superstar on the defensive line. You know, how realistic is that? Not sure. But I would really, really like them to get much better in the secondary. I feel like a main reason that Patrick Mahomes was so frustrated during the course of the night was because he had no first read, no second read. They were just taking away that easy button throws. And a couple years back when the Bills played the Bengals in the playoffs, it was just like Joe Burrow just dunking underneath us and mm-hmm. dunking. And I can't stand to watch that. And I think that that's a big thing of why the Bills fail in the playoffs is because teams are able to do that. So I like what they're doing with bringing in that defensive backs coach from the Patriots. It seems like we're getting a new ideology in the room, in a couple different rooms. Also, the guy from the Saints on the D-line. I like the way they're heading, but I really, really, really would like them to get deeper in the secondary and then also kind of bring in that, you know, first or second round pick on the defensive line. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts about marrying those two up. I think that that's the way that this league's going.
Tim, I have said a lot about the marrying of pass coverage and your pass rush, and every year it seems like they're asking for a divorce in the last game of the playoffs that they end up playing in. And I do think that a pass rush helps you get a stronger secondary, but that said, scheme was an issue of you're playing too far off, you are letting players you're letting quarterbacks have these throws before the pass rush can even arrive. I'm starting to see a bit of a dynamic shift as well. Bobby yeah. Babich called more man coverage with this defense than Sean McDermott or Leslie Frazier ever had.
Sal's been on this a lot, mentioning that, well, there was a bit of a change.
There's
they
a
are
bit of a
calling
change.
Man more.
They're calling more man coverage. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that it's already going in that direction of you're not going to let quarterbacks get those easy throws. Now you need to put the other piece there. You're changing up a little bit of the schematics. You're playing more man, which means there's going to be a little more bump and run. What's that got to do? Disrupt the timing. And once the timing is disrupted, what do you need? You need a pass rush to get home. You cannot afford to have the same old story
mm-hmm.
on your defensive line right now because they're not getting home.
I do the games. I help broadcast the games, so I don't typically get to watch them live. I'll always hear the radio coverage first. So, you know, everyone that works here on Sundays will get to laugh at me, you know, yelling at a touchdown or banging the table because of a turnover, what have you. And it would.
And he's always ahead, by the way.
Yeah, oh, I'm like 15, 20 seconds ahead of everybody. But something that always kind of frustrated me is, of course, I know when a bad play is coming. And Chris Brown does a wonderful job calling the games. And I just – it felt like all year, you know, here comes the blitz. Oh, and whoever this team has picked it up, you know, or you know, they're not getting any pressure. He's got all day to throw, you know, all that stuff. And it did feel constant. I don't know if the stats necessarily back it up. I know Greg Rousseau has been pretty good with pressure rates and stuff like that, not necessarily finishing off plays. But – that is something they desperately need. And to the caller's point as well, I'm so glad he brought this up because it was frustrating me the night of the Super Bowl. Let's not act like Vic Fangio was doing anything special. He didn't blitz once. They got home with four constantly. And Mahomes also was making terrible throws. Now, to Fangio's credit, he didn't change what was working.
Exactly.
He was just like, no, keep going. Like, just keep doing what you're doing.
Keep doing what you're doing.
But that also, I think, is to Howie Roseman's credit. And I'm not saying anything new. I think a lot of people give Howie Roseman a lot of credit. It was not the same thing because they gave up a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns in their 2017 win, but they built a very similar system, which is we need to have a rotation of defensive linemen. We need to be able to come at them in waves and get home with four.
I will say it also is near impossible to replicate the roster that Philly constructed, and they could be looking at a lot of trouble.
Oh, they're going to be the Saints in like 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the Eagles are necessarily a blueprint. They are an anomaly of how much talent they were able to collect onto that roster. And they will pay the piper for it. But they got the ring and it counts.
Yeah, we all know it doesn't
matter.
Kind
of like how the
win.
Rams mm-hmm. did the, heck with them pick strategy. Yeah. And they paid for it eventually. But they got the ring for it. I think that there is a nice middle ground that the Bills can succeed with here. And that's why, as everything that Tim said, like, I don't know if it's a superstar that you need an edge rusher. That's why I think that it still needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the fact that if you're going to change the dynamic of this defense, you're going to call more man coverage, get me someone that can steal a game.
Yeah, 803-0550, the number two call. Talking Four Nations, talking the NFL franchise tag window opens up today at 4 p.m. And really, whatever else you want to talk about. Again, 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR.
Chris Kreider kicks the puck onto his stick. And it's cleared ahead by Jack Eichel. Here comes Zach Werenski. Saved by Erson, rebound, score!
They lost.
And they lost. The Jesper Bratt goal, by the way, I think that made it 2-1 Sweden.
Yes.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I have
Four
just
Nations
loved this tournament.
Has been the shot in the arm that hockey has desperately needed its return to ESPN.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was also a thing, too, of like their Sunday and Monday shows.
Yes.
Leading with U.S.-Canada, or if not leading by, you know, Monday, making sure to talk about, like, look at the Tkachuk family. What is this? Like, and I think that's another thing, too, Derek. It's been this tournament's been a mix of a love letter to the modern game, which is more skill-based. It's speed. It's just the highlights should be on TikTok and Twitter constantly building
up the game. The Connor McDavid goal from that night is still
the first goal.
One of the nastiest
incredible.
Things that you're going to see.
But like I brought up with the Tkachuks, it's also a love letter to the old style of hockey and the fighting and the passion and the bitter hate that you have for your opponent.
That game as a whole was the ode to the power forward.
Yeah.
Players that have skill, that have tenacity, and have physicality. When you have players that have the complete package, that's what that game was the ode to the power forward.
I've loved every second of it. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of fights. Do I like them every now and then? And does my heart rate get up? Absolutely. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I don't need it, though. I'm more into flashy goals and sick
let's
passes.
Let's call a spade a spade. We, as a human race, are drawn to the barbaric tendencies of our forefathers.
And it's fine, but I think that's why I like.
And it's okay to admit it.
Yeah.
As long as you can recognize it.
But I think that's why I loved Saturday so much.
Like, begrudgingly, because I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I don't really love fighting, but at the same moment, you see three fights in 9 hockey seconds, and you go,
Even I'm just like, what is going on?
Or here, I mean, like, just as Sabres fans, what's one of the best plays in Sabres history? For many people, especially if you're under the age of 30, it's Campbell's hit. It's the big monster boom, and it, you know, and of course it's RJ's call on it as well.
But we are still savages by nature.
But like I think that's always been something that is a part of hockey, and I don't want it ever to completely go. I don't want it to affect health of players. I get it, but it is also something that's so intrinsically hockey.
And that is the problem that I have with hockey, with the NHL, I should say, is yeah. Guess what? You can still have clean, tough hits. And like you said, you don't want to endanger the future or health of players.
Mm-hmm.
So when players cross the line, actually punish them properly.
Yeah, that's something they miss too. This whole self-punishment thing is a huge miss.
Yeah.
It's a constant miss. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here for another hour. You listen.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
true crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
They need help in the trenches, and I think Sean McDermott wants that, Brandon Bean wants that, whether it's defensive tackle or defensive end, and it is a very good class at both of those positions. It's not just Abdul Carter, it's not just Mason Graham inside from Michigan, and even if teams need those premium positions, there are enough that feel like they are going to be first round caliber, and it's a really good edge rusher and interior defensive line class, so it will come down to the grades. It'll come down to, of course, what the Bills prioritize and, of course, what they do in free agency, filling some of those defensive needs in the trenches.
Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports, going to have a weekly segment with Shope and the Bulldog Wednesdays at 4 p.m. talking a lot about this draft class. And Derek, I, for one, I think this draft perfectly sets up for what the Bills need.
The beef and cheese.
The beef and cheese wagon, baby.
The beef.
We had the wide receiver train last year. This year, it's the beef and cheese wagon. Slowly turning, you know, to the side of the train. They need the big boys. And that's a big part of it too. They need, you know, space eaters. They need help in the trenches. Matt Parrino.
Get in my belly.
Matt Parrino, yesterday with Bulldog, brought up a really good point too, that I think the Bills need to kind of change their draft process, or maybe how they identify prospects, is maybe take some risks. You know, looking back at last year's class, they ultimately take Cole Bishop in the second round, and he sat most of the year, partially due to the fact that, well, kind of didn't need him to play. They were fine at the safety position. But what about a guy like Tavondre Sweat, who won the Outland Award last year for the best defensive lineman in college football, is a big guy, 6'4", 345 pounds, and fleet of foot. He's one of the few positives on the Tennessee Titans, but he had some red flags character-wise.
So, yeah, taking a risk, especially with the culture that you've built within mm-hmm. this team, I feel like it's something that you can do. Good rosters have typically a little bit more of that wiggle room, that freedom, when it comes to grabbing a guy that might have that sort of issue.
I think for a long time, the Bills too aggressively have written off anyone that doesn't fit. And I could be wrong. I'm not inside the building.
Maybe
that's what it feels like.
That could be also what makes the culture so good, is that they make sure to grab high character guys.
But it kind of becomes like, why build that culture if you're not willing to then, you know, kind of bring in guys who maybe aren't perfect for it, but you can help mold them.
Yes.
How strong is the culture really?
Question mark.
Adonai Mitchell was a guy I brought up for this a lot last year, where it was his big problem was he seemed to be kind of a flighty practice player. But a lot of it seemed to stem from his lack of taking his insulin on time.
Yes.
He's suffering with diabetes, and so that became a huge issue. My thing, and I kind of went away from Adonai a little bit once Diggs was gone, but my whole point was, you've built this great locker room,
this great culture. You think McDermott is making sure that that's happening on schedule? You better bet.
Well, and that was my whole point, is like, you have Stephon Diggs, who's a crazy person in terms of his you know,
intensity
and how he's going to be practicing and how he's going to perfect his craft. You put then a talented receiver like Adonai Mitchell with him, and again, I mean, his rookie year kind of went awry a little bit. I blame mainly quarterback, and I will die on that hill. I mainly blame quarterback. But he was somebody I would have loved for them to have taken a shot at. Tavondre Sweat was another guy. I wrote one of our draft articles on him, the same thing. And his issues sort of came out a little bit later about what he was. But it never seems like the Bills want to take those risks. Looking back to this Eagles team that just won the Super Bowl, it's like all risks.
It is.
It's guys who maybe aren't going to make it, but they've got an incredible leader in Jalen Hurts at quarterback. And they've got a really well-established culture of guys who have been there, done that, know what to do in the league, and can handle a little bit of drama.
And the Bills, honestly, are just as equipped for that. They've been there, done that, save for one piece. They've done everything except for the really two things that you could do. Gain a one seed and go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But they've done everything else in between. Why not? And
And I think especially when you need sort of that game breaker, that elite level player, you got to take some risks.
You need some talent sometimes, and sometimes talent comes with an inherent risk. That said, I know the general manager is not scared of that. Why? He tried to trade for Antonio Brown once.
He did. That's right. He did. He did do that.
I know Brandon Bean is not afraid of it at all. I know Sean McDermott's not afraid of it at all. Why? Because they took a good-hearted stab at probably the worst locker room presence in modern history.
But even look who they ultimately did trade for, Stephon Diggs. What was his perception before he got to Buffalo? He's a diva.
Yep.
He's going to want out of Buffalo in 15 minutes once he finds out Josh Allen's throwing the ball. And they still made that move. Even Von Miller, not really, you know, necessarily those issues, but they're big swings. I want them, though, to start doing that in the draft, too.
And I
trust
think that
your culture. Trust your basically your foundation to put maybe guys who aren't
one may
suited
say
the
trust
best.
The process.
Trust the process. And I guess it's my thing is, look, were you ever going to get a shot at a Jalen Carter? No, he was gone way before
that. He was pick 9.
But
it was also a surprise that he got to pick 9.
Yeah. But
because he was that good.
But I do look at guys like Tavondre Sweat and Adonai Mitchell, who I think both, if they were on the Bills, would have been very successful this year. Adonai Mitchell, for a good period of the year, his separation stats for rookie receivers, even though his numbers were down, were incredibly high. That's why I blame the quarterback a lot.
And that's why I think that, like, it may come off as arrogance,
mm-hmm.
but the Bills absolutely should be doing these sorts of things because of the fact that they are a steady presence. They are a steady winner. They are one of the most consistent, dominant teams in the NFL. They are a presence year in, year out. Who doesn't want to play for that?
Yeah.
And I say that, and it sounds arrogant as hell. But
it's where you're at, though.
But that's where they are. They are a consistently recognizable force now within the league circles. Buffalo is not just this place of cold and chicken wings. They also now have a good football team.
Yeah, guys.
You could add that to the list.
Which is huge. And that's the thing, too, is you're not, you know, the Buffalo Bills of the past or even like the New York Jets now, where you go there and you're like, I'm making my money.
Where you had to sell the barn to get Mario Williams here, which was a big deal. But
it was a huge deal. But a lot of it, I mean, more now, to along the lines of,
now it's not a big deal.
Well, but for me, it's also, you're not going to get guys that necessarily going to like be on their best behavior, maybe, you know, to lack of a better phrase. You get to Buffalo, it's, okay, I'm playing with Josh Allen. McDermott, they're always in the AFC Championship, or they're always, you know, one of these best teams. I have got to lock in. I think that does play a factor of you know, showing up to a current Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, compared to showing up to the Cleveland Browns, the New York Jets, the Raiders. Where,
even like a team like Indy.
Indy, yeah, is a lot of it too, where, you know, they might kind of let it slide a little bit. They may not be as tight on some of these guys where, I, like you mentioned, with Sean McDermott, you think he was not going to be on top of Adonai Mitchell to take his insulin if that really was an issue?
Exactly.
Or Tavondre Sweat, kind of speeding a lot?
Yeah.
You may have had some troubling headlines early. Look at Jordan Addison is maybe the perfect example for Minnesota.
I hate to say it like this, but again, I know the team's not scared of it. They drafted a punter that had some very major issues with character. So they're not scared of it, I don't think. I think they just are believing more in – yeah, I don't think they're necessarily always about this culture over talent issue. Because they've proven in the past that they can do this, or they're willing to do this. They're willing to take a stab at this sort of thing. Ready? Even Von Miller.
Yeah.
Von Miller didn't have the cleanest character record.
No. I think some stuff in college as well.
He had the domestic issues before coming to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not new.
I want to get to a point in the draft.
I'm not advocating for draft the worst people possible. I'm saying that this team is not scared of it.
No, and I agree. And that's my thing, too. I'm not talking about like blazing red flags. It's like, no, it's Aikman. He's still great. No, I mean, if they're really falling because of such issues, I get it. But I don't want to like write somebody off because it's like, nah,
yeah,
he might be a little lazy in practice.
It's not like you're advocating
stuff
to
like
be
that.
The mid-2000s Cincy Bengals.
No. they need difference makers. It can't all be, you know, the best PR answers you've ever heard kind of guys or stuff like that.
And again, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I've seen this team take stabs like this before. I would expect that they will continue to do so.
I like, though, that you don't think they have any kind of buyer's remorse from Von Miller.
No.
That's something I thought about maybe talking about later this week, but you seem pretty confident that it's not going to hurt him at all.
Here's why. Because it's the same stance that I had about the Xavier Worthy nonsense from the start of the year.
Mm.
If you are scared of that sort of thing, you're not an NFL GM. You're just one of us arguing with a microphone or a phone call or whatever, or on Twitter.
I'd like him never to trade with the Chiefs, though, again, just personally.
Ready? I don't care. Do it again. As a matter of fact, do it to piss everyone off, to make your team better.
Yeah,
That's the thing. That's how I know that Brandon Bean is not scared, is because he knows that he's going to do what he thinks is best for the team. I know the man's not scared. What do people call him? Big Baller Bean. Make the baller moves.
It's partially why people believe that the Bills will even be involved in a Myles Garrett potential trade.
And the fearlessness of a general manager being willing to take these swings, that's why I know there's no remorse on that sort of thing. Again, the man tried trading for Antonio Brown. You want to talk about fearlessness? That is staring at the face of fear and laughing in its face.
It is
Brandon
wild.
Bean.
Pittsburgh has insane receivers.
I know the man has no fear over what has happened in the past. I know that there is one drive, and that is get over the bleeping hump for the love of everything. So, yeah, I expect they're going to be in on getting a star pass rusher because they tried it. The idea didn't work because of bad luck, not because the player was cheeks when he signed. No, he declined because he got hurt.
Yeah.
This wasn't Trent Murphy.
No, that was a miss. That was a miss.
Yeah.
No,
they will not be scared of the idea. If the price is right, they will acquire somebody.
But, I mean, like me and Sal talked about it a lot, too, of, you know, those first 9-10 games before that Thanksgiving game against the Lions, it was a perfect signing. It was exactly what the Bills needed. Von Miller came up with the closing play for the Chiefs' regular season game that year that ultimately gave the Bills the win. I mean, it worked. The problem, you rightfully bring up, it was bad luck. It was an injury. He declined not because of his own ability, but because of an injury. I will say, though, in part, is I'm always going to be a draft-first guy. I mentioned it in the first hour. I'm very rarely going to be big on trades. Pass rusher, though, and quarterbacks are the two, especially in draft, I'm willing to do. But I love this defensive tackle class so much, and I think that was a big issue why they weren't getting pressure.
It's about a shot in the arm for me.
Yeah, I get
that. That's what I think this is that the Bills ascended to a new level when they made a trade for a veteran acquisition. And a name that would actually like really ring some doorbells and go, hey, they're serious. And this is the next step. For me, you get a star player on this defense, something that they are missing and have been now for the last couple of years. They need a star player on defense too, because you look at them and you go, you've got a bunch of good players, none of which I'm going and saying great. Yes, I know there's a recognition problem with Buffalo. Good for Christian Benford for getting a vote for Defensive Player of the Year.
That's awesome.
That is also the only player on that team that got a vote for Defensive Player of the Year. You need some recognition, you need some star power, and you need a difference maker. All of these things can be true. And I know the general manager will think the same damn thing. He is not afraid of making the trade to bring in a difference maker.
But I do look at the draft, and I think you can get difference makers there, I think especially this year. I look at what the Rams did.
I also look at Brandon Bean's draft record with defensive linemen, and I don't love it.
So, I mean, but is that really the big thing for you?
No. One thing does not guarantee the other.
Okay.
That said, I know that it's going to be my hill to die on. And if I die on it, then I'm dead. Okay? You can all celebrate after. But I think that this is the next step for them, is getting that star player on defense and having it be an established guy, kind of like the Stephon Diggs trade. You bring in an established talent to help this team ascend, because there is still some ascension to do.
I mean, there's still some ascension to do. They also do have some young defensive players that you maybe could get excited about. Javon Salmon didn't play a ton, but he had 2 sacks. And you wonder, you know.
He was really fun as a splash rotational defensive player.
Then you wonder, you know, going into year two, and you do add, let's say, a Myles Garrett or Max Crosby, what does that do for him? I know a lot of us talk about Groot potentially being a part of a trade there, so maybe he's not on this roster.
But
it doesn't help out
Ed
Oliver in the interior.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, 1,000%. What does a premier edge rusher do? Makes a quarterback collapse into the pocket, step into the pocket. And what do you have there? You have one
one of the better pass rushing defensive tackles in the National Football League.
His biggest problem, honestly, I don't even necessarily think it's him. It really is. If he does not have a space eater next to him, because he's always been an undersized defensive tackle.
He's a smaller defensive tackle.
And that's why I do bring up, you know, guys like Trevondre Sweat, or even this year, I'm a big Kenneth Grant guy. He seems to be my number one for defensive tackle. You add him, I think that also helps out Oliver and maybe even the outside pressure, but but you're also hoping, you know, for immediate rookie impact.
Welcome to the beef and cheese wagon.
It's going to happen.
Beef. Draft the beef, get the cheese, which is the zingy, zesty cheese, the pass rush, beef and cheese. That's my thing this year. Large boys, boring draft class. Give me big boys. Give me space eaters.
Mm-hmm.
And give me not having a first-round pick because you traded it to go get a top-tier pass rusher. Boring draft to start it.
How much are you not going to like this offseason if they don't trade for Garrett? Or Crosby.
You shrug your shoulders and you move on.
Okay.
I'm not going to create any sort of like... I'm not going to make any issues of it if they don't. Because, first of all, I'm used to being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, if they don't do it, they don't do it. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. It was just an idea. And it is a philosophy that I think they should do. But again, I'm not an NFL GM.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know the GM ain't afraid.
I don't think the GM's afraid. No, I mean, we were talking about it before.
He's not hesitant. You mentioned like how I suspect that there is no buyer's remorse. There better not be.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a regret over what happened.
And how it went down.
How it all went down. But that's it. You're upset about the circumstances that happened, not the idea. And chasing the idea is what makes me hopeful about this. And that's why I'm going to stand on this hill. That's why I'm getting on the Beef and Cheese Express.
We were talking about it, though, even before we jumped on today. You know, when you're talking about that and everything that kind of went on there, you do wonder, though, if they even have the ability to go get Miles
Asset
Garrett.
Asset-wise, they are actually stronger than I think in years past. You mm-hmm. have multiple yep. second-round picks. You have your first-round pick.
Garrett, and that's just this year.
Garrett in particular is the aim because of the less cap gymnastics you have to do. Crosby has a bigger cap hit. Hendrickson's going to command a bigger cap hit. If you want to do this and it's easier on your cap space, work with Cleveland, who also is putting their hands up and surrendering this year. Like, they're the Will Levis surrender cobra after tossing that weird lateral pick six in the first week.
His first month was
Cleveland's season is next year is that. Just surrender cobra and you deal with it. Work with the Browns, see what you got to do, and find the best deal for the team to help you win. That said, again, it doesn't have to be Garrett. Garrett is the face of my ideal,
mm-hmm.
which is get a star player for this defense. I'm not worried about it if it is a player in the secondary. A ball hawk safety would be a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You had two box safeties starting for you for the most of last year.
Yeah.
Tell me they don't get even more turnovers or more big plays out of a ball hawking safety like what Micah Hyde was for this team.
I agree. Yeah,
I would say they need a rangy safety because that's how that defense's philosophy works.
You think they're going to do that in free agency? I feel like safety might be one of the few positions they really
they might try to fortify it.
Yeah,
I do agree. Taylor Rapp was this interesting low key idea for grooming to be one of the starting safeties, but
you got a little bit of a look at it.
But now you're starting to see like he is probably a replacement level player.
I fully believe they're going to do Cole Bishop, last year's draft, second-round pick, this year, free agency. And that might be like one of their few moves in free agency.
And then
outside of retaining guys.
And then draft and free agency is beef and cheese.
I mean, I think so, too.
I mean, draft and trademark, I should say.
I am looking at the Rams, though, in 2024, last year's draft, as maybe the perfect template. Because when we look at the Eagles, again, they were the ninth overall pick and they get Carter. When you look at the Rams 2024 draft, it's those first two selections. Verse at 19, he ultimately goes on to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. And then they draft his compatriot at Florida State, Braden Fisk. in the second round at pick 39.
Beef and cheese.
And look at how those two were. Verse wins defensive rookie of the year and is a Pro Bowler. Verse gets 8.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and he's one of the better young defensive tackles in football. And it, overnight, it changed their defense. Now, did you nail both those picks? Yes. And like you have mentioned, Brandon Bean, not just, you know, defensive lineman, but really the early round drafts
not just,
have been frustrating.
The problem is it's not just the drafts. Brandon Bean with free agents has also not done the greatest of jobs.
But then
you look at
those new coaching additions they brought in.
But that's why the ideal of a trade for an established player is there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have guesswork in this. That's why Myles Garrett's the face of the idea for me. Is
there is no guesswork
there's
involved.
There's no
you
guesswork
know he's
here.
Great. Yeah.
You know he's great. Get him. He's available. Get him.
I look at the last two
Hendrickson,
Super Bowl winners, though, and it's cheap, young defensive talent, not the big swings necessarily.
It is, but I do think that it's a step in the right direction because the Bills do have enough of those players. What are they lacking? A difference maker, a game stealer.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the Pittsburgh Steelers relevant?
Yep.
And it's not just because T.J. Watt steals them games. It is because they have enough defensive talent across the roster that when Watt goes into cheat code mode, they win games.
Guys, yeah.
Like, I think back to the Bengals game in week one of a couple of years ago. They pick off Burrow like 4 times.
Yeah, he's awful.
T.J. Watt was a menace for them. And the only reason the Bengals were even in that game is because Matt Canada's offense. But it's because that roster has a collective. The Bills have a collective of talent. Add me that cherry on the top.
That's also a good point, too. Like what does it do for Terrell Bernard's game and Christian Benford's game?
What does it do for Ed Oliver? What does it do for whoever's on the other edge?
Do all of a sudden, like, you know, Terrell Bernard goes from a damn good middle linebacker to a Pro Bowl, maybe All-Pro middle linebacker?
Benford, he's not the focus.
Yeah, he's not the focus. He can kind of just, well, he's been a turnover machine. That's why a lot of us loved him right away when he took over for Tremaine Edmonds was it was, oh, this guy can make big plays. That was always Edmonds' big issue. He was going to be there just a step late, where Bernard is there a step on time, and he's right there when he needs
Might
to make
even
a play.
Be a step ahead.
Might be even a step ahead. I mean, and then they have young guys like Dorian Williams, who for a little bit there made people believe, Matt Milano, he's a nice, fun piece to have. We've got our outside linebacker. Or I mentioned Javon Salmon in his rookie year, not getting a ton of play time. 2 sacks, and you wonder if he's going to be kind of a guy for them in the next few years of a closer sort of deal.
And what helps a young defensive secondary? Because that's what the Bills are going to have to turn into now.
Yeah.
Give me that top-tier guy. Give me a pass rush headlined by someone that takes the focus and still wins anyway.
I'm preparing for the Bills to not have the capital to do it.
Give me a guy who can command double teams and still beat them.
I'm telling you, I'm preparing, and I want it to happen. I think the Bills have the cojones to do it. I think they have the will to do it. I don't know.
They have the assets to do it.
I think they have the assets, but I think a team like Washington is going to be, because they can have the cap space, they don't have to do too much. The Bills are going to have to do a little bit more. I mean, they're behind 2 teams in terms of available cap space. Like, Washington is going to be aggressive this year.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing is, it's going to be very difficult to outbid them.
If you lose out to another team, that's fine. I still that's why I'm not
Kansas City or Philadelphia.
That's why I'm not ride or die on this hill. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to die on the hill, but I'm not going to like scream out no if they don't have it happen. Will I be dejected? Yes, I'll be more irritated that another team probably ponied up more. That's what it's going to be for me. It's going to be like, curse you, Washington. Why'd you give up an extra first round pick or like whatever the context is going to matter here.
Yep.
But again, I think it's just the idea to me makes enough sense to want to be on.
That you're on this train. That you're going with it.
Beef and Cheese Express.
This year, Washington has a first round pick, 29th, right behind the Bills.
Right
Bills
behind,
pick at 30th.
Right in front of them, yeah.
They have 1 second, 1 third, 1 5, 1 sixth, and 2 sevens.
I think the Bills are better equipped to make a deal. They have more assets.
It could be.
Washington, though, might be more prone to giving up more in the future.
That's more my thinking, is that because of the cap space and
not
because
just the cap
what
space,
the team is looks like now.
You also have a quarterback on a rookie deal. You can get away with more.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you mentioned the cap space on that. Having the rookie deal quarterback, and also just telling this young team, yeah, let's do this, is never a bad idea.
Well, yeah, especially when you find the young quarterback that changes. I mean, we've seen it countless times now that having that young quarterback just changes fundamentally the franchise.
And the Bills do have to play a little behind the eight ball there now.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you can't pull these things off. And why Garrett's the face is because he costs the least amount on your cap.
Yep.
You will have to give up more premier of assets, but you have less gymnastics you have to do. It's a trade I think I'm willing to make. It's a deal I'm willing to make with, you know, not having as much cap gymnastics you have to do. I'm willing to part with more assets to get him because of that fact. Give me that dude. Boring day one and day two. You and I are going to be sitting here on draft night and day one going, why are we here?
Oh, I won't be.
Because
Kenneth Grant's going to be there at 30 and he'll be like, here we go, boys. Here we go.
It's going to happen where we're going to be sitting here on day one of the draft talking about, yeah, they gave up their pick for a premier pass rusher. Why are we here?
Could be. 803-0550, the number two call. Rob, we'll get to your call after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer with you for another half hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
I don't know many teams are going to hand you a Chris Jones or a game wrecker. They're probably sewed up. There's not a lot of players that make 28 to 30 some million dollars a year, which I think is kind of what those high-end defensive players are making. We'll turn over every stone we can to find them, but would I love to add one of those guys? Heck yeah, I would.
Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean, that's at locker cleanout, or well,
his, heck yeah, indeed, Bean.
Yeah, that's at his final press conference. We will hear Bean speak next week, though, at the NFL Combine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of interested to hear him probably get a similar question again, because before he had said that Myles Garrett had not officially announced, you know, his trade request.
Yeah,
and
I would
gone
imagine
on his radio
we're probably
row.
Going to hear. We're having conversations, something like that.
Or just, you know, or he kind of like,
you want me to get
the
wink for
wink,
Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
If he says something hinting at that, I'm going to be insufferable next
week. I don't anticipate him saying that. I just anticipate him probably saying the same answer of, you know, we're turning over every stone. We're here in Indianapolis. Like, we're, you know, I think the first day is the big guy. So, like, he'll, you know, we're here. We got interviews today, or we had interviews earlier this week, what have you.
I'm just saying, if he hints at anything towards we're having conversations with them, or
Dave's
even
doing backflips.
Yeah, I'm trying to do them. Again,
it's the key. I'm trying to do them.
Too much beef and cheese.
Yep, there you go. 803-0550, the number two call. We go back to the phones, and we've got Rob on the line. Rob, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, Zach and Derek. It's always a pleasure to listen to you guys. I'm chuckling over here because before Derek even said the beef and cheese, that's what I was saying to myself. So I'm all about the beef and cheese wagon. I definitely want that mayhem wrecker. But what I was thinking about was, you know, expect the unexpected of what Bean will do. You know, he's always got something that's unexpected. And I'm looking forward to that. As far as the draft, I hope that the scouts look a little harder, do more homework on overtime, looking for that. You know, of course, I would love to have Myles Garrett. But if that doesn't work out, I mean, I won't be highly disappointed. But it's definitely defense needs to beef up a lot. And our secondary, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what we do in the draft and during the off season. But I always listen to you guys. And also, as far as the hockey, you know, you guys were talking about that. It reminded me of old time hockey. It was great when I had the game on Saturday. Of course, you know, my situation, I can't see it. But that crowd just like got me so into it. It was so loud and exciting. And, it's hard for me to root for either team because I have ties in Montreal. So, you know, as a Gauthier, you know, it's like it's a win-win situation. I love USA hockey, but I also like the Canadian hockey team as well. I'm really looking forward to this Thursday night, and hopefully TD Bank Arena will do the same thing as far as loud. I mean, it was just unbelievable, and I wish, describe to me how pretty that goal was, that Connor McDavid. Was that a backhand or what?
Oh, my goodness.
It was a backhand, and Rob, there's no player that can just turn on the afterburners and fly past you like McDavid.
McDavid with a head start is deadly.
Yeah.
The backhand was crispy. It was like Connor Helba could not do anything about that. And Charlie McAvoy couldn't do anything about it because McDavid's got a full head of steam at middle ice. Good luck.
Yeah.
Zach Werenski knew it, and like he like kind of like haphazardly like put a stick up toward the shins of McDavid as he's skating by him, like, yep, I'm cooked. We're done here.
I'm going to put in an effort, but the effort's not going to be good enough.
Zach Werenski was like, eh. And like that's Zach Werenski he made that happen to. So it was Pete Connor McDavid to describe that. But yes, I think though that back to the Four Nations about like U.S. and Canada and everything like that, like I know our Canadian listeners are going to love me saying this. I want them to win.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that it's like it's spikier and tastier, the rivalry heading into the Olympics.
Yeah, I do want the rivalry at full tilt. I do.
I don't like. Yes, an American win would still probably do the same thing because then the Canadians are like you're angry.
Oh, and two in the tournament in pretty quick succession as well.
As a matter of fact, like yeah, no, they kind of smacked us in the mouth for twice within a week. We don't like that. We're not going to take well to that. But I do think. If it's 1-1 in that tournament, it gives a little crispiness, and the Americans again go, yeah, we got them the first time, but we didn't get them the second time.
You lost a game that mattered.
Just like in 2010.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Crispy.
I do want the rivalry on full tilt. It's become must-watch TV for me this Thursday. I've mentioned it Saturday. I was able to watch the first period. Not much else after that. I caught it later. Thursday, though, nope.
Yeah.
I am totally free.
Move your schedule around.
I will be there at... probably around 8:20 is when it's actually going to start.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be locked in for that because I think that's going to be amazing television.
Should we get a watch party going?
Maybe. But I've mentioned it too. They got 4.4 million viewers. I think they peaked at just over 5 between ESPN and ABC. I imagine it's going to well surpass their peak because of the buildup of the game now.
The second funny thing about a peak viewership to me now. Because like the Super Bowl, the peak viewership started happening when it's like, wait, the Chiefs are getting what?
Yeah, was it going into halftime or was it like the start of the third quarter?
It was halfway through the second.
Halfway through the second, okay.
Like that's when people are like, hang on, like,
what's happening?
What's happening? I wasn't gonna watch this thing. The Chiefs are getting what? And in this one, it was right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, what's going on?
There were how many? Well, that's what happened with me too. Because I was like, all right, I'll get to the game. I don't really need to see the anthems at the start, what have you. And then I happened to be on my phone, and a random Twitter user was just like, yep, of course it's going to start with a fight. I'm like, it started with a fight, yeah. And so I immediately run to the TV. As I turn it on, it's Brady fighting then, and I'm like, this is fantastic. This is great.
Yeah.
For a good 30 seconds though, I thought I was behind, and that Brady's fight was the first one. Until I listened, and then I was like, oh, that's amazing.
So it was a perfect sequence of events because the fights happen, and that gets people there, and then the McDavid goal happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this is going to be real good. And then McAvoy hits McDavid, U.S. ties it. Like, that was the perfect first period.
Yep.
To draw people in and keep them there.
On McAvoy, though, if you did miss it, we do know now, though, due to an upper body injury, it seems to be an infection. He was at the hospital last night. He will not be playing on Thursday. So a key member for the United States team, as you've mentioned, you know, playing a big part in that, will not be there. They've also been dealing with injuries. Brady Tkachuk left for a little bit last night. He only, I think, played, a few shifts as well. After coming back from his injury, he kind of like basically got pushed into the net. Matthew Tkachuk and Austin Matthews are both dealing with stuff, although they don't seem to be long-term. It seems like they'll be there on Thursday, but they're dealing with some issues injury-wise. We'll see how that goes.
What's up with the illnesses and the infections and everything like that going on with this tournament, though?
It's
going
to give PTSD to Sabres fans. Let's not do that. on the draft stuff, and Rob, thanks for the call, man. On the draft stuff, I am just almost preparing for the Bills to not get Garrett. But on your point to the scouts doing, you know, extra homework and such, I think for me is find guys who you know can play day one.
Yes.
Who and I've been a big proponent of this because, well, you've seen the Eagles really do well with it. And it's never a bad idea. Go draft guys off of the national championship teams. that were playing high-level college football for years. I like the raw prospects because a lot of them can be fun, and sometimes you get a Josh Allen, and it changes your franchise. A lot of times, though, you're kind of sitting there constantly waiting, and they're not playing much their rookie year. I mean, look at their first two draft picks from the season. Keon Coleman was more of a he was growing, then the injury happened, but even before that, it wasn't like he was a guy demanding targets. It wasn't like he was really growing into the offense. He kind of had the Seattle game, and that's about it. And Cole Bishop, we've mentioned, never really forced the Bills' hand to get him into the game.
Right.
It never really happened. Kyer Elam, a complete miss in the first round. You happened, though, to get Christian Benford. It made that one more palatable.
Yeah, you softened the blow on that.
Yeah.
In a big way.
But I think, and again, this is why I've brought up guys like Kenneth Grant. To start these last 2 years, one on the national championship 15-0 Michigan Wolverines, and even this year, they started off bad. That defense was never bad, and they end up getting two pretty huge wins over Ohio State and Alabama, and Grant and Mason Graham played massive roles in that. I mean, they have other guys. Will Johnson's the best cornerback in this draft class. I would even say above, you know, Travis Hunter if you're just looking at a pure cornerback. I think that's where, for me, is go add those guys that have been there, done it. And I think Grant's perfect for the Bills because of his situation. As I mentioned, Mason Graham, that's his other defensive tackle on the other side. And he is a better prospect. I think he might be the best prospect in this draft. I think he is close to a can't-miss defensive tackle you can find. He's that good at Michigan. Grant just happens to be playing next to him. But I don't know if you were listening to me and Josh yesterday. But for Texas, the wide receivers, Isaiah Bond was considered that dude.
Yep.
And he was having really early success, the Michigan game and such. Like he was a burner. He's bigger than Worthy, so you weren't really necessarily have to worry about that. And he was running, you know, kind of a complete route tree at the start of the season. He ultimately suffers an ankle injury, and he's gone for a little bit. And then even when he comes back, him and Ewers never get on the same page. As he's gone and ultimately not getting on the same page with Ewers, who steps up? Matthew Golden. And he went from a guy who I thought he might get in like the late second, maybe third round, is before, of course, the Mari Cooper trade. You know, I'm like, he could be there. He just looks like a smooth operator. This is fantastic. Yet, no, that's gone. Because once it was just his show, and, you know, they had a few freshmen and guys that just weren't his caliber, you saw how good he was. And he now is at a point where, outside of T-Mac from Arizona, Luther Burden from Missouri, and maybe Emeka Ebuka out of Ohio State, it's Golden is like the other first-round wide receiver. That was not true a month and a half ago. I wonder what Grant would be, seen as a prospect-wise, if, say, Mason Graham, I don't want to say out for the year, but missed five or six games and kind of had to come back from his injury, and Grant was sort of the Batman to their roles.
You know what's an interesting little wrinkle, too, with the draft and how things have kind of traversed, especially with last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember how quarterback and offensive heavy it was in the first 15?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If a run like that happens again this year, especially because of the fact that that quarterback class did reward a lot of the teams that took them.
Yes, it did.
There could be teams that are just bad teams trying to take a quarterback down there, and we might see another one of those kinds of runs, even with a quarterback class that doesn't seem as worthy.
Look, Michael Penix last year, no one really expected him to go that high, and specifically that team. But also, you got Jalen Milroe, who is all traits.
Yes.
And we're about to go to the combine, so we'll find.
And that's Cam Ward,
and that's the thing,
Shador,
too. The combine just kind of shows you what NFL teams are actually thinking. Right now, it's just, here's the best players, here's your mock draft. The combine will show you, because they're talking to NFL GMs and scouts.
They're starting to get ideas of, What hands are you tipping at here?
And another quarterback who I know, if you're on any kind of draft Twitter, you've probably heard his name as a sneaky first-round guy, Jackson Dart out of Ole Miss.
Yes.
I saw even Doug Farrar today mention he's watched the tape three times now, and he's like, a mid-first-round guy if you need a quarterback. And you look at a team like a Las Vegas or Cleveland early if they don't go an Abdul Carter route and you keep Myles Garrett, you're right, you could have that early run of quarterbacks. And all of a sudden, it opens up. There's wide receivers available. There's cornerbacks available.
There's beef and cheese available.
And there's defensive tackle and edge rushers available. The draft could really go a number of ways. The Bills have gotten screwed a few times in that with the wide receiver run. Maybe they get rewarded this year because they don't need to go offense and defense is there available necessarily.
They might also take advantage of it. Say they don't trade for a Garrett or a star pass rusher.
Right. And someone like
2 seconds.
Yeah.
You can move up the board.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. One more segment here before we get you ready for Sabres Live. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR. segment here as myself, Zach Jones, and Derek Kramer send you over to One Bills Live.
Yeah, they're today. Starting at noon today.
I mistakenly said Sabres Live in the last segment. Rectified that. Do want to get to real quick some baseball news today. I want to get to it in the first hour. Totally missed it. So we're going to get it here. And that is because it's kind of local. We've been talking four nations, Canada, United States. The Toronto Blue Jays, every team now in the MLB, I think even last week, was into spring training. Pitchers and catchers reported. Now we're getting players have started to report and speak with the media. We found out yesterday Mike Trout's moving to right field. Cool, fine. It's going to keep me engaged till about June. For the Blue Jays, man, I feel bad. All-star Vladimir Guerrero Jr. spoke with the media today, and the deadline to sign a new contract was yesterday, and they did not get that done, and he is going to go into free agency, it appears, come Toronto. November. And when speaking with the media, when asked, were you guys close on a number? No.
Toronto has messed up a lot of things, and I think their decline with that new core started the minute they traded Teoscar Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hernandez was becoming just as much of an ascending talent and part of those teams that really started to become fun, fascinating with Bichette, Guerrero, and they get rid of one of the linchpins of that team, of that future, and that spelled the end for them.
Yep.
And I didn't want to be right because I like Toronto. They're actually the team that I cheer for within baseball.
Yep. I know a lot of people locally do that, yeah. Especially they having their stop here in Buffalo for
yes.
a little while.
And oh my God, the amount of fans that were flocking the seats in Buffalo to watch that trio.
Yeah.
Was fantastic.
I feel bad for Blue Jays fans because this also was going with like huge misses in free agency where it felt like you were like in the final three and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani. It's just you hope maybe this year they can kind of figure it out to maybe keep Guerrero. I don't think he's ever going to play for the Yankees. I think he's like openly against them. Like
yes,
like personally, but. You then start wondering about
the
team.
But the Dodgers do seem to get everyone now these days.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much any big free agent.
Big news from the Four Nations Faceoff. Mike Sullivan confirms Quinn Hughes is joining Team USA.
Oh.
Hughes in, McAvoy out. That's big for Thursday.
All right. That is a new wrinkle for Thursday. That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll be back tomorrow, but coming up next, One Bills Live on WGR.